to the homeland to find a wife for Isaac. He gives him two commands, basically. Don't take a wife from the Canaanites where we live, and don't take Isaac back there with you. You go find it. The angel of God would have guided you. So he goes back there to the homeland and meets the woman when she comes out to the well. Talk about three times he prayed to God. One is to tell him, the one he had picked by what she did when she offered him water and watered the camels. Rebecca comes out to draw water and makes the same exact comments that he had asked for through his prayer for God. Gave God thanks about it for success in meeting her, and went to meet the rest of the family, talked to the brother and father about the marriage arrangement, and they said, this is the Lord, we can't refuse it. Again, he did a prayer of thanksgiving for this, and they stayed a night then, and next day they're ready to go back. They go back then, and again, there's no narrative about the trips back and forth, but when they get back, Isaac's there. The servant explains to him what had happened, what transpired, and it says that Isaac took her into his mother's tent, and she became his wife. And it'll be made at this point here that it said that he loved her. He took her as his wife. So that was the story about getting a wife for Isaac. Then we get Abraham's death at the age of 175, buried by Isaac and Ishmael together. But we pointed out also that the story now is going to turn to Isaac and Rebekah. And that'll be the main narrative. However, remember this chart here. You see Abraham there in the middle. And look at his lifespan. Right above it, you'll see Isaac when his lifespan occurs. And then you'll see Jacob above that, his lifespan. And you'll notice Abraham is still alive when Jacob and Esau are born. So even though we're going to turn the narrative over to Isaac, Abraham is still, he's still there, okay? It's just that the chronology of the narrative turns more to Isaac now. And we'll through tonight, and then we'll come turn into Jacob after tonight. So, all right, move it into chapter 25, starting in verse 19, where we're going to pick up tonight. We got the first part of it last time. So 25:19, and let's read 19 through 26. This is the genealogy of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begat Isaac. Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah as his wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Padam Aram, the sister of Laban, the Syrian. Now Isaac pleaded with the Lord for his wife because she was barren. The Lord granted his plea, Rebekah, his wife, conceived. But the children struggled together within her, and she said, if all is well, why am I this way? So she went to inquire of the Lord. The Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb. Two people shall be separated from your body. One people shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger. So when her days were fulfilled for her to give birth, indeed there were two twins in her womb. The first came out red. He was like a hairy garment all over, so they called him Esau. Afterwards, his brother came out. His hand took hold of Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. So we'll pause there for a minute. A lot of time span covered in this section here. So Isaac has married Rebekah. Isaac is 40 years old at the marriage time. And then Rebekah comes pregnant, but it's not until 20 years later. So Isaac is now 60, and she has the twin boys. We would normally say Jacob and Esau. Actually, Esau was born first, kind of like Moses, not Moses, Joseph's sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. We used to say them backwards age-wise. But Esau is the older, Jacob's the younger. So that makes Abraham now 160. So he's got 15 more years to live after the boys are born. Verse 23 is the key verse here, where she says there are two nations there. Twin boys are coming, and the older will serve the younger. So keep that point in mind as we go through the rest of it, because the older will serve the younger. So two nations, two sons, one stronger than the other. And the older will serve the younger. So we pick up now in verse 27, and this time we've done another big span, because now it's going to refer to both of them as men. So now they are grown as we go to verse 27. Verse 27 through 34. So the boys grew. Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, but Jacob was a mild man, dwelling in tents. Now Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Now Jacob cooked a stew, and Esau came in from the field, and he was weary. Esau said to Jacob, "Please feed me with some red stew, for I am weary." Therefore his name was called Edom. Jacob said, "Sell me your birthright as of this day." Esau said, "Look, I'm about to die. What profit shall this birthright be to me?" Then Jacob said, "Swear to me as of this day." So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob gave Esau bread and stew of lentils, and he ate and drank and arose and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. They got two sons. Esau's a skillful hunter, a man of the field, and Isaac loves him. He likes to eat his game. And Jacob's a mild man, dwelling in tents, and Rebekah loved Jacob. Esau is also called Edom because of red, from the red stew. He's the father of the Edomites. Actually, the name Esau means hairy, from most of the commentators will say that. So Esau for the hairy, but the Edom comes from the red stew. So Esau is tired. He comes in from the field, and he's tired, he's weary, he's hungry. The original word means starving. Some translations use the word famished. "I am famished." Whereas Esau says, "I'm about to die. If I don't eat, I'm starving, I'm famished, I'm weary. So I need something to eat." Then Jacob's cooking stew. So Esau foolishly sells his birthright. Now, we don't understand that really, because the birthright to us doesn't mean anything special like it did then. But the birthright and the blessing are two very important things at this time to these people. And so we have a hard time, since we don't do that and think about that, to get the significance of it here. So it says that thus Esau despised his birthright. We'll talk about that some more in a minute. Let's jump down to 26, read the first five verses. There was a famine in the land, besides the famine that was in the day of Abraham. And Isaac went to Abimelech, king of the Philistines in Gerar. The Lord appeared to him and said, "Do not go down to Egypt. Dwell in the land of which I shall tell you. Sojourn in this land, and I'll be with you and bless you. For to you and your descendants I will give all these lands. I will perform the oath which I swore to Abraham, your father. I will make your descendants multiply as the stars of heaven. I will give to your descendants all these lands, and in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. Because Abraham obeyed my voice, kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." The big part we want to get here is this is a repeat of the same promises God had made to Abraham. He's now making them specifically to Isaac. So, to your descendants, I'll give all these lands, same promise he made to Abraham. I'll multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven. And your seed, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. Same three promises that we talked about with Abraham. The key point, I think, here in this, though, is the why. Because Abraham, think nothing about what Isaac had done. He says, because Abraham obeyed my voice, kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. The reasoning why he gave these promises to Isaac. Isaac is with Abimelech. Abimelech is a title. It's not the name of a person. Think about the pharaohs in Egypt. Abimelech is much like that to these people here. So Abraham dealt with Abimelech. Here's Abimelech again. Not the same person necessarily, but it's more of a title. So he's in this area here up at the top left of the red box. You see Gera there with a question mark by it. Here's a picture of the terrain from that general area of the country there. And here's another map that's got Gera marked on it. So this is the general area where Isaac is moving around. We'll see him back in Beersheba here in a minute. So with Abimelech, verses 6 through 11. So Isaac dwelt in Gera, and the men of the place asked him about his wife. And he said, "She is my sister." Does that sound familiar? "She is my sister." For he was afraid to say, "She is my wife," because he thought, "That's the men of the place should kill me for Rebekah, because she is beautiful to behold." That came to pass when he had been there a long time, Abimelech, the king of Philistines, looked through a window, and he saw there Isaac showing endearment to Rebekah, his wife. Abimelech called Isaac and said, "Well, obviously she is your wife. How could you say she's my sister?" Isaac said to him, "Because I said, lest I die on account of her." Abimelech said, "What is this you have done to us? One of the people might soon have lain with your wife, and you would have brought guilt upon us." So Abimelech charged all his people, saying, "He who touches this man or his wife shall surely be put to death." In Gera, the land of Abimelech, agrees with Rebekah that she would be his sister, not his wife. At this time, she was not his sister, where Abraham at least had a half-sister with his wife, Sarah. And he does it again because of fear of being killed. Abimelech finds out, and he reacts. This text here says showing endearment to her. So I read it was caressing her, touching her. So enough that Abimelech realizes that she is not his sister. She is indeed his wife. They said, "You could have brought guilt on us." Again, it sounds very familiar to what we read with Abraham. So the Lord blesses Isaac. He plants a crop, and it yields 100-fold. Abimelech's afraid because Isaac is so great. He says, "You're mightier than we are." And you got to think about wealth here and the power that comes with it. Remember, Abraham gave gifts to his sons, but Isaac got his inheritance. And Abraham was already a very, very wealthy man himself. So now Isaac has inherited that. Plus God has blessed him on top of that. So Isaac is quite wealthy, and it's increasing as time goes on. So Abimelech is somewhat fearful of that. I don't know how big Isaac's household was. I think back to Abraham when he went to rescue Lot. He got 318 trained men from his own household to go to battle with him. So that's pretty significant there. You take Isaac now, it's inherited what Abraham had, and then God has blessed him even more on top of that. So I'm going to skip some reading here just because of the sake of time. So we get into this thing of redigging wells, where the people, the herdsmen of Abimelech, have filled in the wells that Abraham had dug. And you think about the flocks, not just the people, but the people they've got, plus the flocks they've got in Isaac's household. What's the importance of water? They've got to have it where they are. And there's no bodies of water anywhere in this area where we're talking about here. So the wells are super important to them, the water needed for the flocks as well as the people. So they get into this back and forth where they fit in the wells. Isaac's servants redig them, build them in again, and he moves from well to well, place to place with that. And finally, they wind up at Beersheba. The name actually Beersheba comes from the well digging and redigging that comes with this. And here the Lord again promises to bless Isaac. So let's read the last couple of verses of chapter 26 about Esau. Verse 34. When Esau was 40 years old, he took his wives, Judith, the daughter of Beeri, and Hittite, and Basemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. And they were a grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah. So Esau has taken two wives. From the Hittites. That his parents are grieved. Most of you are parents, got children. You think about what it would be like for your children to take wicked women, idolatrous women, as their wives. How you would feel about it, the reaction you would have. So when it says his parents were grieved, I think sometimes we can associate with that cause of great distress to someone. It's the word grieve. So now we get more into this thing of the blessing. So let's take a little time with that, because that's the important part of this whole session tonight. So let's start in chapter 27 and verse 1. Now it came to pass when Isaac was old, his eyes were so dim. Think about it a minute. We start off tonight talking about Isaac meeting Rebecca, getting married, and then she's barren for 20 years, and then have the boys, and now they're grown, and now Isaac is old. So we've gone through a lot of time just in these few chapters here. Isaac's piece in Genesis is very small. Lots about Abraham. We have a lot about Jacob and then Joseph, but Isaac's piece is really very small. So Isaac was old, his eyes were dim, so he could not see. So he called Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son," and he answered him, "Here I am." And he said, "Behold, I am old, and I do not know the day of my death. Therefore, please take your weapons, your quiver and your bow, and go out to the field and hunt game for me. And make me savory food such as I love. Bring it to me that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die." Now Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke to Esau, his son. Esau went to the field to hunt game to bring it in. So Rebekah spoke to Jacob, her son, saying, "Indeed, I heard your father speak to Esau, your brother, saying, 'Bring me game, that I might make savory food for me, that I may eat it and bless you in the presence of the Lord before my death. Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice according to what I command you.'" That's down through verse 8. Isaac knew, at least I think Isaac knew, what God had told Rebekah before they were born, that the older would serve the younger. So, if Isaac knew that, did Isaac know that Esau had sold his birthright? I don't know. But if he did know that, why would Isaac try to give the blessing to Esau when he had sold his birthright? Because he was his favorite son? Did Rebekah intervene because she knew what was right, that Jacob should have the blessing? Or did she intervene to protect her favorite son? So think about those as we go through this. So Isaac is old, he's nearly blind. He sends Esau out to hunt for a game, make him food, he may receive his blessing before he dies. So Rebekah hears the plan, and she tells Jacob, "You do exactly what I tell you." And she asked that any curse was to be on her. So, deceit. Deceit. Rebekah plots with Jacob to deceive his father. Jacob's going to lie to his father multiple times in order to receive this blessing, following the instructions of his mother. So, after Jacob goes in, lies to his father, covered his hands with the hair, made the food for him, specifically tells Isaac, "I am your son Esau." And guess the blessing. Verse 27. "Surely the smell of my son is like the smell of the field, which the Lord has blessed. Therefore may God give you of the dew of the heavens, of the fatness of the earth, and plenty of grain and wine. Let people serve you, and nations bow down to you. Be master over your brethren, and let your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed is he who blesses you." That's the blessing Isaac gave to Jacob. Esau comes in from the field, finds out what's happened, realizes that he did not get the blessing. He asks Isaac, "Give me a blessing also." And Isaac says, "There is none." Now, I don't totally understand this. We don't, because we don't do things this way. There is no blessing for Esau. Once he's blessed Jacob, he gave Jacob the blessing, the dew of heaven, the fat of the earth, that people bow down to you. So all the good things that he was to, and these things were things that would come to pass. All the good things he gave to Jacob. And he saw, "You have no blessing left for me? None?" He says, "There is none. I have no blessing left for you." Esau weeps. It says he cries with an exceedingly great and bitter cry. That's how important this blessing was to them. An exceedingly great and bitter cry. So what does he tell Esau? Right, the opposite pretty much of what he told Jacob. "You will dwell away from the fatness of the earth and the dew of heaven. He will live by the sword and serve his brother." Remember what was said before they were born? The older will serve the younger. But then later he would break the yoke from his neck. I don't know if this is when it's talking about that or not. Later on, during the time of Jesus, Herod the Great, who was king of the Jews, was an Edomite, a descendant of Esau. So there you've got the descendants of Isaac being ruled by a king who was a descendant of Esau. I don't know if that's what he means when he says break the yoke from your neck or not, but that's one point at which they've been in subjection. So let's read 41 through 46. So Esau hated Jacob. Look at that. Esau hated Jacob because of this blessing with which his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, "The days of mourning for my father are at hand, and then I will kill my brother Jacob." And the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah. So she sent and called for Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, "Surely your brother Esau comforts himself concerning you by intending to kill you. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice again. Arise and flee to my brother Laban in Haran and stay with him a few days, 20 years. Stay with him a few days until your brother's fury turns away, till your brother's anger turns away from you and forgets what you have done to him. Then I will send and bring you from there. Why should I be bereaved also because of both in one day? Then she talks to Isaac. Rebekah said to Isaac, I'm weary of life because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob takes a wife from the daughters of Heth, like those who are daughters of the land, what good will my life be to me? Jacob hates Esau. Esau hates Jacob and threatens to kill him. Now, remember this point. Esau has threatened to kill Jacob. And Jacob's fleeing because of that. Destruction of his mother. This point of Jacob, Esau wanting to kill Jacob. They're going to meet later on. That's going to be a great big play on this part. So remember this threat here that Esau is wanting to kill Jacob. So Rebekah learns of Esau's plans, and she sends Jacob away back to her brother Laban in Haran. For a few days, she says. She thinks this will blow over, they'll be gone, and she'll bring him back home. But then she goes and talks to Isaac, and she doesn't tell him why she sent Jacob back to Haran. She says, oh, I would be so upset if he took a wife from the people of this land, like Esau had done. Which she would be, but that's not the reason she sent him back. So he tells Isaac this. We'll get to the next chapter. Isaac's going to react to this, what he does with it. So let's go to 28 and read the first few verses. Isaac called Jacob and blessed him again and charged him and said, you shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. Rise, go to Padan Aram, the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take yourself a wife from the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. It's a blessing again. May God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you, that you may be an assembly of peoples, to give you blessings of Abraham, to you and your descendants with you, that you may inherit the land in which you are a stranger, which God gave to Abraham. So the blessing, the promises have been made to Abraham, to Isaac, and Isaac now is referring the promises to Jacob. And we'll get to where he actually makes them to Jacob, God does later on. But that is coming here. So Isaac sent Jacob away and went to Padan Aram to Laban, the son of Bethuel, the Syrian, the brother of Rebekah, the mother of Jacob and Esau. So Isaac agrees that Jacob should not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan, sends him back to Padan Aram to take a wife from the daughter of Laban. So he would go back and marry his first cousins. Jacob and Esau are 77. You calculate the age at this time. Doesn't seem like that, but there's a few chapters we've had here. After a short time, very short time, following Isaac, the narrative is now going to shift to Jacob. So we had Abraham for lots of chapters. We've had Isaac for just a few chapters. Now the whole thing is going to shift to Jacob when he goes off to Padan Aram. And we're kind of left as far as, like we left Abraham, we're going to leave Isaac kind of hanging here a little bit. Esau, verses 6 through 9. Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him away to Padan Aram to take himself a wife from there. And that he blessed him and gave him a charge, saying, you should not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. So Esau knows what Isaac wants for Jacob. And that Jacob had obeyed his father and mother and had gone to Padan Aram. Esau saw the daughters of the Canaans did not please his father Isaac. So Esau went to Ishmael and took Mahalah, daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, and the sister of Naboth, to be his wife in addition to the wives he had. So Esau knows what Isaac wants He does not want Jacob to marry the daughters of the Canaanites. So he goes and takes a wife, one of the daughters of Ishmael, right the opposite of what he knew, says himself, that his parents wanted. So that kind of covers the narrative in a hurry. Now, I apologize for the speed, but I knew we had a lot to get through. So let's summarize a little bit. Favoritism. See that? Lies. How many? Deceit. Trickery. Hatred. Spouse selection. Rebellion toward parents. But the only good thing, I guess, was the promises of God that was repeated here to Isaac. Most of the rest of it tonight has been bad. So if we look at our faith and failings idea that we're talking about, I put Isaac on the faith side for one point, and that is when he prayed to God that Rebekah might have a child, and God answered it. So I see some faith on Isaac's part there. But the rest of it, Isaac, child favoritism, Rebekah, same thing, lots of deceit on her part, Jacob, deceit, lying, Esau, profaned his birthright, hatred, spouse selection, rebellion. That's about all we have tonight, seems to be negatives. Okay, I got a few more things to talk about. I'm going to stop. Comments from anybody about the narrative? Yeah, good point. What Brent said is that there's another faith point that we can put there with Isaac. And that is, he had faith in the blessings. He was blessing Jacob. If that's what God wanted. He referred to in Hebrews 11, by faith, Isaac did what he did. So, another point for the faith side. Somebody else? Well, let's talk about this for just a minute. Thus Esau despised his birthright. Turn to Hebrews chapter 12, if you would, for just a minute. Hebrews chapter 12. In Hebrews 12, 16, the verse says, lest there be any fornicator or profane person like Esau, who sold his birthright for a morsel of food. Profane person, characterized by irreverence or contempt for God or sacred principles or things. Contempt or irreverence for God or sacred principles. And the birthright was a sacred principle to them. It was important to them. Or to treat or use something sacred with irreverence. God, Esau profaned his birthright. Where profane refers to one who by word or conduct treats religious or something religious or religion with contempt or has no reverence for that which is sacred. May be shown by word, matter of life, or even by sneer. Esau profaned his birthright. Actually comes from the word threshold, same word we get threshold. You step on a threshold of a door as you go through the door. To profane would be to step on or treat it in a way that we would a threshold as we walked across it. Opposite or antonym of the word holy. Describes persons who are prepared to turn their back on that which is holy in order to focus their attention on that which is immediately present. Does that describe Esau? He came in famished. I'm about to die. Give me some food. Sell me your birthright. Okay, I will. And his insistence on the gratification of the immediate need led him to overlook the importance of his rights as the firstborn child. So I say all that to come to this question. How often are we tempted to lose focus of the future for the now. In the context of Hebrews 12, 14 through 17, it says, pursue peace and holiness without which no one will see the Lord. That's the way the verse starts off in verse 14. But then in verse 15, we have this phrase, looking carefully, lest someone fall short. That word looking carefully is the same word that's used in 1 Peter 5, 2, the word overseer. Just as an overseer, an elder, is to look carefully and watch out for the flock, then look carefully as us. We look carefully at our lives, lest we fall short of the grace of God. We look carefully lest any root of bitterness cause trouble. We look carefully lest we be a fornicator or a profane person. Esau was rejected, wishing he could go back and change what had been done. But the verse says he was looking for repentance, thought it diligently with tears, but he didn't find it. Let's don't be a profane person. Let's don't swap the future for the now, like Esau did. Anything else? I think I heard the bell. Not too smooth tonight, a lot to cover. Just going to jump through it in a hurry. But we've got some good point there at the end we need to think about. Thank you. Oh, Sunday morning, chapter 28, verse 10 through the end of chapter 30. And Jeff will have that Sunday morning.